It is Your Money, and I'm Susie Jones, and it is the hour we dedicate every week to helping you with your money, understanding it, what to do with it. And we have with us today, as always, Bruce Helmer, who is the founder of the Wealth Enhancement Group and a financial advisor. Peg deservedly gets this Sunday off. This is Palm Sunday, so a lot of people are getting ready for the big Holy Week. Bruce, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you for being here as well. And I know this is an important spiritual week for many listeners. And thank you for joining us today. And Susie, I'm going to throw a curveball at you. I know that we had, I think it'll be okay. But, you know, we had a scheduled topic, and I think I'm going to save that, for a later date. I am still sensing there's a lot of trepidation out there. It was another tumultuous week in the market. Wednesday was a very, very good day, and we recaptured a significant portion of the losses that we had. And then Friday was a good day, but everybody is asking me, what's going to happen this week? What's going to happen the rest of the year? What should I do? And people are still nervous. And I think we got to talk about that a little bit, and I want to try to give some perspective. And as always, we'll take as many calls from listeners as we can, or texts or questions in some form. And it doesn't have to be on, you know, the market volatility, but it certainly can be if you're out there and you're nervous and you're wondering what to do or what's going to happen next. Feel free to text or call. But I wanted to start with, I can't remember if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, but on the show, I made a comment that market retractions honestly never bother me. Peg has talked about the fact that she's like anybody else. She's human, and she gets nervous when the market goes down. And I said, it doesn't bother me at all. It bothers me only from the standpoint that I want to make sure we're doing the best we can for our clients, and that these market retractions aren't going to be detrimental to my clients' retirement happiness, retirement satisfaction, and so forth. But as a personal investor, retractions don't bother me. I actually see them as an opportunity. Not that I believe in market timing, because I don't, but I do believe, for example, and I might have said this on the show, when the market was near its bottom, like a week ago Monday, I realized that we had not funded my wife's IRA for 2025 yet. Oftentimes, I don't do it till the following spring when we're getting ready to file our taxes, which I'll come back to taxes in a second, because it's not lost on me that we've got an important date in a couple days this week for taxes also. But I decided that since the market had retracted so much that we were going to fund Pamela's IRA now. And people said to me, well, what if it goes a lot lower? And I said, well, it might. I don't know where it's going to go, but I do know it's over 10% cheaper than what it was at its high. So I feel like we're buying at a discount or on sale. I don't know that it won't go lower, and it has a little bit since I made that decision. But like I said, I don't know where it's going, but I know where it's been, and I know it's cheaper than what it was. So it felt like a good decision for us. It felt like an opportunity. Now, I said I don't believe in timing the market. What I mean by that, Susie and listeners, I have a lot of people, and again, thank you to my clients, because it doesn't really tend to be my clients. Clients that have been with me for a long time, and we've coached them and worked together for years. I don't get that many nervous phone calls when this happens, when we have this market volatility. I get some, but not as many as you might think. But I still have a lot of review meetings scheduled with existing clients, and on the review meeting, their concern is going to come up, and it should, and it's logical. And so we talk about the strategies that we've used and why we did what we did and diversification. And I'm going to dig into that a little bit more in a second also. But inevitably, clients will say, well, what if I just got out for a while and I know I can't stay out? I know I need to have some market exposure, but I can get back in, later when all this volatility is over. That question does come up. And I always say, well, let's think about that. Let's talk about that. What do you mean you'll get back in when it's better? I mean, like one good day, like last Wednesday, would that mean you'd buy back in? And then I typically get an answer like, well, no, one day might just be an aberration. That's, you know, that's not it doesn't indicate a trend or anything. I go, well, one week, five good days in a row. Maybe a little longer. 2 weeks, two positive weeks. So my point is that when they say, I want to time the market, I want to get out for a while, and then I'll get back in when it's better, they don't know how to define better. And if you define better by saying, after the market's gone up for a while and I feel safe, then you've missed a whole bunch of the uptick. And there's a mountain of statistical data that verifies that people that try to time the market to get out when it's bad and get back in when it's quote unquote better, they end up shooting themselves in the foot, and their returns are not as good as they would be if they would just stay the course and ride it out and stay in the market. And this is particularly important, and this is, I know many of our listeners right now, Susie, people that participate in a company retirement plan, like a 401k, and they get the 401k statement and they see that depleted account balance. I always tell people, look, don't look at your balance. Look at the fact that you're contributing money on an ongoing basis, every paycheck. So you're buying into the market now when the market's trading at lower share prices. And if you look at the history of the market, it's up and down. It's a roller coaster ride. But over a long period of time, stocks have always trended in an upward direction. And don't stop participating in your company retirement plan. Don't take all your money out of the market and put it into cash and wait and put it back in the market when things are better. Those decisions, while they might feel good in the moment, are probably going to be counterproductive in terms of your long-term return on investment and your chances of long-term success. Now, something really important that I just said that I want to come back and focus on. I had a meeting with a client this week that understood everything I just said and agreed with me, but said, I'm just so nervous that even though I know I might be losing some return in the long term, I think I would just feel better and less anxious and not toss and turn at night if I reduced my risk exposure for a while. To which I said, look, I'm not a robot. I'm not without feelings and emotions. I understand that. And if you want to do that, it's your money, and that's what you should do. Just recognize that we got to really watch it closely and decide when and if we're going to increase your exposure again. But what it comes down to, and with this client, Susie, and listeners, what I said was, okay, let's help you decide how to feel comfortable. Let's say you stayed completely in the market right now, and over the next several months, the market declines another 25%. Obviously, that would be alarming. That would be nerve-wracking. That would be disappointing. That would be fearful. You know, all those bad adjectives. Now compare and contrast how you would feel if you got out of the market and it went up 25% over that same time frame. Which one of those decisions, getting out of the market and watching it rise 25% and you miss the uptick, or staying in the market and watching it go down 25% and you write it down, which of those feelings, if you made that decision, would be more disconcerting to you? Which one would gnaw at you more? Which one would bother you more? And if missing that uptick would bother you more, and that's where I put myself, if I got out of the market and missed a 25% uptick, it would drive me crazy. I'd be kicking myself in the butt. But I don't honestly mind the 25% ride down because I'm confident that it will bounce back in the long term and it will be back up long before I intend to spend that money. But a lot of people would say to me, well, I'd be more bothered by the 25% ride down to the basement. If I miss the uptick, so be it. But I don't want to write it down. And if that's the way you feel, then perhaps you should reduce your stock market exposure a little bit. So when people came to me, which they have the last week or so, and said, how can you remain so calm? Mm. That's part of the reason why. I'm diversified. And I follow the advice that I give my clients. I follow myself. So I'm diversified. And what I mean by diversified, I have exposure to stocks, but I also have a lot of cash or a lot of money in investments that have no risk of principal. And then I've got some investments that are kind of in between. I've got bonds and precious metals and real estate and other things. So I'm diversified from the standpoint of asset classes. I'm also diversified in terms of risk. Some of these investments have considerable short-term risk. Some have no short-term risk. Some have moderate risk. And I diversify from a tax standpoint. I've got some money in investments that are fully and immediately taxable. They're not in an IRA or 401k or Roth or anything like that. But I also have dollars that are in tax-deferred accounts like my company 401k, my wife's IRA, and I have money in vehicles like Roth that are tax advantaged, and I won't have any future taxes due. And I also believe, and again, if listeners have heard Peg and I talk about this a lot over the years, some of your money you're going to need to spend, or you might need to spend in the next couple of years. That money should never be exposed to the volatility of the stock market. If you think you're going to need money in the next couple of years, or you know you're going to need it, that money should not have been in the market anyway. And if it's not in the market, this recent retraction or this recent volatility didn't hurt you because that money didn't go down. If your long-term money is down a little bit the last couple of weeks, that also hasn't hurt you yet, unless you panic and sell out now. That's because that money, hopefully those stocks recover and the market comes back before you need to spend that money. So the other question I got a lot in the last week, listeners and Susie, is you talk about short, medium, and long-term. What does that mean? And I would tell you that different advisors, different people quantify that a little bit differently. But for the sake of my discussion, I would say short-term money is any money that you think you're going to spend or you know you have to spend in the next 2 years. I would say moderate-term money is 2 years to 10. And any money that you know you don't have to touch, unless you want to, because sometimes you might want to, but you know you don't have to touch it for 10 years or more, that's long-term money. That, in my opinion, should be in stocks and stay in stocks. And that's, and I'm talking to you people listening right now in your 30s, 40s, or even 50s, and it's your retirement plan. It's your 401k, it's your IRA, it's your Roth, and you're not going to touch that money until you retire. In fact, you for sure aren't going to touch it before the age of 59 and a half because you're going to pay a 10% penalty if you go get that money early, if you have what's called a premature distribution. So if you do that, I don't need to know what the market's going to do tomorrow or this week or even this year. I don't need to know that. And in some level, I don't even care because I'm highly confident that 10 years from now or more, when I might actually tap into that long-term money and use it for my lifestyle at retirement, I'm highly confident that based on history, those stocks will have recovered and they will be significantly up from where they are right now. I don't know what's going to happen in the next week. I don't know what's going to happen in the next month. I don't even know what's going to happen in the next year, but I'm highly confident that if you give it 10 years, it's going to do very well. So that's why market retractions honestly don't bother me. That's why I can stay calm. That's why I've been blessed to have most of my clients not calling me with nervous phone calls. They understand what we're doing, why we did it, and why if it made sense a couple of weeks ago, it still makes sense now. It doesn't suddenly not make sense just because of this market volatility that we're going through. And then I guess the last thing I would say on this, and then we can even open it up for questions a little bit early here in the first half of the show. The other thing is, from an investment perspective at Wealth Enhancement, I think we take a little bit of a different approach from the standpoint. I think a lot of people listening right now, and maybe even people in my industry that do what I do for a living, if you ask them the question, what's the goal of investing? The answer might be something like, get the highest return we can, or words to that effect. And I would tell listeners, and I would tell everyone, that's seldom, if ever, my goal as an advisor. My goal and my recommendation to clients, and again, what I do in my own life, is to try to achieve an aggregate return on investment of all my assets and get a return that I know will help me achieve my goals and objectives. What does that mean? And again, that's different for everybody. We're snowflakes. When do I want to retire? What does my lifestyle look like at retirement? Where am I going to live? What are my core values? What am I going to help kids? Am I going to help grandkids? Am I going to give money to church and charity? What am I trying to achieve? What does my life look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and 20 years from now? And we can actually do forecasting or cash flow analysis. We can determine what kind of rate of return you need to achieve on your money to hit the bogey or to hit the goal, the financial goal, that you will have enough assets to live the way, the lifestyle that you want to live, to have a happy retirement or, you know, whatever that means to you. We can calculate what that rate of return needs to be. And then the investment advice that we give is such that I think we can achieve that return or better. Usually it's better, quite frankly, but we want to achieve that rate of return with the least amount of risk possible. So sometimes I tell clients to reduce stock exposure, not because I'm bearish on the stock market or I'm afraid that the market's going to go down, but simply because they don't need that much stock exposure to get the rate of return that they're trying to get to achieve their goals and objectives, whatever those are unique to that individual. So again, we're seldom or we're rarely giving investment advice or creating investment portfolios for clients where we're saying, hey, we're trying to maximize your return. We're going to get the highest rate of return we possibly can. That's seldom what we're trying to do. We're trying to get the rate of return that'll lead to your happiness and get that rate of return with the least amount of risk possible. And again, we do that by broad diversification in terms of asset classes, as well as risk, as well as diversification from a tax standpoint. And we've talked about it on the show a lot, that most people don't have good tax diversification. They have a majority of their assets in tax-deferred accounts. And then part of our job, if that person comes to see me later in life, is to help them create tax diversification or help them create short-term money that they can spend so they don't have to sell stocks when the market is down. So if we actually take this approach, and again, I do this in my own life. It's not something I tell clients to do, and then I don't do it myself. I do it in my own life. Market retractions like this, honestly, don't bother me at all from a personal standpoint. But again, it's not lost on me that it can be fearful for people. It can be very disconcerting for people. And you just got to block out some of the noise and stick to your plan. Have a plan, stick to your plan, whether you're using an advisor or not. If you're not using an advisor and you're really nervous right now, I'm not trying to turn this into a commercial for us, but call us. We can help. I think, again, Susie, if you talk to my clients, they would probably tell you, if you ask them, what's the biggest advantage of working with Wealth Enhancement Group? I don't think they would say return on investment, although they might, and our returns are always competitive on our portfolios if you compare apples to apples. I think what they would say is they simplify my life, right? Or they give me comfort. I sleep better at night. I have more time to pursue the things that are important to me and not worry about my money. I can travel. I can spend time with my grandchildren. I can pursue my hobbies. I can hunt and fish and golf and hike and do the things I want to do and not worry about sitting at a computer screen every day researching, investments or looking at the financial news, trying to figure out what I should do with my money. The relationship simplifies my life. It calms me. I know I've got somebody that I trust watching out for me, and it just makes my life easier. And sometimes the work that we do with clients, the value is quantifiable. We can look at a strategy and say, oh, look, this strategy saved you X amount of dollars in taxes, and we can quantify it. But oftentimes it's not quantifiable. It's what I just said. I feel better. I'm more comfortable. You've simplified my life. I have more time to pursue the things I want to pursue and not worry about money, not worry about taxes and so forth. Now, we're almost out of time. So the last word on taxes, April 15th is right around the corner. Josh and I were actually trading texts about the checks that we're writing to the that we're going to have to write to the IRS. So yes, I'm well aware it's April 15th. Any tax questions? Again, taxes for 2024, that ship has sailed. But any tax strategies in terms of planning for 2025 and beyond, that might be on your mind today also as you're ready to file if you haven't done so already. April 15th is what, Tuesday? Yeah, Tuesday, I think, is April 15th. So that's around the corner. So, Susie, questions about investing, about nervousness, about financial planning, about taxes. Second half of the show, we'll take as many questions as we can get.
All right, very good. 651-461-9226. Again, the number to call, 651-461-9226. It is Your Money. Bruce Helmer, founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, financial advisor, is going to take your calls and your questions via text for the entirety of the second half of the program. I'm going to say the number one more time. Write this down, 651-461-9226. Bruce, we're getting a number of questions, some about taxes, others about the market. So we'll get to as many questions as we can after this short break. And we are back for the second half of Your Money. Here we have, again, taking your calls and texts, Bruce Helmer, the founder and financial advisor at Wealth Enhancement. We're happy to have him, and we're happy to have you. 651-461-9226. Bruce, I told you we had texts and questions coming in, and we do. Do you have any final thoughts before we start taking questions?
No, let's jump into it. Let's get as many as we can.
All right, very good. We have Jerry calling today from Monomedi. Jerry, welcome to the program. You are on the air live with Bruce Helmer.
Good morning, guys. I always appreciate and enjoy the show. Bruce, just curious about financial advisors and their fees or their fee structure. It's my understanding it, a lot of it has to do with the amount that you have invested, but can it be explained a little bit more than that?
Hey, Jerry, thank you for listening, and happy Palm Sunday. And, yeah, let's talk a little bit about how advisors get paid, because there is a couple of different options, and it depends upon the firm, and it depends upon the advisor. So there are certain advisors, financial planners, that might charge a fee only for the plan or for the advice, and that fee can vary greatly. But I think of it maybe not unlike an accountant or an attorney. It might be the fee for planning might be based on how long the plan takes to prepare, how laborious it is, and so on. Or maybe they just have flat fees that we sell, or we'll do a financial plan for you for X, whatever X may be. Those types of planners, while I certainly appreciate what they can do, they would probably market themselves as not having a conflict of interest because they're not trying to quote unquote sell you anything. They're just selling you on the plan, where you invest the money, who you invest with, who you pay to manage your money, who you pay for insurance. They're not going to get involved in any of that. At Wealth Enhancement Group, and I'll always bring this back to what I know, which is my own company, you can do that. If you said, I want to work with Wealth Enhancement Group, but I don't want to invest with you for any number of different reasons. Maybe you don't, all your money's in a company retirement plan and you don't really have investable assets. Maybe you have a friend or a relative in the business, and if you took the money from them to invest it with us, it would be detrimental to that personal relationship, and I wouldn't want you to do that. But you say, I want your planning. There will be some sort of fee for the planning that we would tell you in advance. Here's what the fee is. And at Wealth Enhancement Group, Jerry, we also actually guarantee satisfaction. So you don't pay for the plan in advance. After we deliver the plan, we would say, is this what you were looking for? Did we do what you wanted us to do? Are you satisfied? And if you say yes, then we'll invoice you for the plan. If you say no, I'm not happy, you'll never see an invoice. And I will proudly tell you, I've never had that happen. In fact, usually clients say to me, oh my gosh, you could have charged me a lot more because of your plan. I saved so much in taxes, it paid for the plan for the next 5 years. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So that's one way you can do it, to just pay for planning. What is, I think, much more prevalent, and it's certainly more prevalent at our firm, is that you do choose to invest with the advisor, and there's what's called a fee for assets under management. And those fees can vary a little bit, but again, I'll tell you what we do, and I think it's pretty, what we do is not uncommon in the industry. So the fee for at Wealth Enhancement Group, let's say it might start at 1.25%, and that means 1.25% of the assets that we're managing. So let's say, let's make the math really easy. You invested $100,000 with us. We're going to charge $1,250 in a fee, 1.25% of that $100,000. Now, a lot of firms, including ours, will discount those fees the more you invest. That's very typical. It's a reward or an incentive to have you invest more money with us or with whatever the firm is, we'll reduce the fees the more you invest. That's very, very typical. But at Wealth Enhancement Group, we might start at 1.25% and work down from there. Now, I've had a lot of people over the years go, oh my gosh, 1.25%, or I'm going to pay you $1,250 a year, but that's not worth it. How do I justify that extra cost? What I would tell most people is, first of all, if you're going to invest yourself, it's not free. If you buy investments, you're going to have trading costs, even if you have an online trading account. If you buy funds, there's going to be a cost inherent in that fund. So there's nothing free in this world. So if you pay an advisor like us a fee, it might increase your total cost. But even if you do it on your own to try to avoid the cost, it's not free. You're paying somebody somewhere something. Now, let's say that this 1.25% that I just mentioned is extra cost over and above what you would have otherwise had. How do we justify that? Well, I tell people all the time. Number one, let's say that I showed you a portfolio that included funds that we were going to recommend, an investment and asset allocation, and you looked at it and said, well, I could just go buy all these funds myself on an E-Trade account or an online trading account, and I don't have to pay you the 1.25%. Why wouldn't I do that? And my answer is, well, go ahead if you want to. But number one, you're not going to get these funds at the same price we get them. You're going to pay more. Wealth Enhancement, because of the volume of assets that we have with these managers, get discounted fees. So if you're looking at that 1.25% as a cost disadvantage, right out of the gate, we're going to eat into that a little bit by getting you a discount on the same funds that you would not be able to get them as cheaply on your own as you get them through us. Number two, you're getting proactive constant management. You could take my recommendations and go buy the same investments on an online trading account, but when are you going to make deviations or adjustments to the portfolio? When are you going to sell half of your ABC and go out and buy XYZ? That proactive ongoing management is what probably enhances the value the most, because while I tell people all the time, Jerry, nobody bats 1,000, and at Wealth Enhancement, not every investment decision that we make always works as well as we want it to, but we're right a lot more often than we're wrong, and that proactive management over time probably enhances returns, probably reduces risk, and gives the client a better net-net than what they would get on their own. So yes, we're increasing the cost, but we're getting you discounted fees on a lot of the funds. We're giving you proactive management, and at Wealth Enhancement, and I apologize if this seems self-serving, if you're a money management client, you also get all of the planning that we do. Now, not everybody in my space does this. In fact, most don't. But this money management fee that we're talking about is not really just a money management fee. It's a fee for comprehensive planning as well as money management. You're getting a better bargain. You're getting more bang for your buck than if you just went out to a money manager that doesn't do financial planning and paid them 1.25% to manage it. We'll do that, but we'll also do the planning at no additional cost. So what does planning mean? The future value forecasting that I talked about earlier, pension analysis, Social Security analysis, tax reduction strategies, Roth conversion analysis, retirement income planning. All of those things, again, I think my clients would tell you, are more valuable than just what was the return on investment on my investment portfolio. It's all those other things, those questions, those ideas, those strategies that enhance the overall return on investment and enhance the chances of their success. It's these strategies or planning that I think are the most valuable. So I always tell people in one-on-one meetings, I've said this at ski engagements, and again, I don't mean to turn this into a commercial, but I tell people all the time, if you can find someone in our space that'll do what we do for less than we do it, go hire them. I don't think they exist, but there's a lot of good advisors out there that aren't with Wealth Enhancement Group. There's a lot. I think any good advisor will add value to your situation net of cost. And I'll close with this because I just realized I probably gave you a longer answer than you wanted, Jerry. I tell people all the time to measure me. If over a reasonable period of time, I can't demonstrate that you're better off with me than without me, net of the cost. If you can't see that we've justified a fee, if you don't feel like you're better off, then fire me. That's what I would do in this life. If I had somebody that wasn't doing the job, I'd fire them. So, knock on wood as I say this, we don't get fired very often because our clients recognize that net of cost, they're better off with us than without us. So wherever you are, whoever you choose, whatever you're paying, number one, you should understand your fees. They should be transparent. It's a little stunning to me how often a potential new client comes to see me and they're working with somebody now. And I'm like, what are you paying your advisor? And they're like, I don't know. They don't know. With Wealth Enhancement, the fees are very transparent. You'll know what you're paying us. And over time, you'll be able to measure quantifiably and unquantifiably whether you think you're better off with us than without us. So I know that was a lot, Jerry, to unwind, but again, there can be fee-only planners that just do a plan for a fee. Most people in my space now, it's a fee for assets under management, but most of those don't do planning and money management. I'm proud to tell you that we do that. And one last thing, I keep saying I'm going to quit, and then I keep talking, but this is important. So when I'm in meetings, I talk about how our fee is a percentage of the assets that we manage, but because it's a straight percentage of the total, we do better when you do better. So we're in this together. If your account grows, you're happy, but we're happy because we're taking the same percentage on a bigger number. We do better when you do better. We're in this together. But the cynic could look at me and say, well, yeah, but you still got Helmer. You still got to get your fat, bald, greedy hands of my money to make money. So you're going to look at whatever I'm doing and say, well, that's no good. You should move that to Wealth Enhancement Group. And Jerry and listeners, I will tell you, it is not uncommon at all that we review somebody's situation and we say, you should not reposition those investments to us. Those investments are appropriate for you. We wouldn't change them. We're not sure we would do anything different. We're not sure we can do anything better. Or maybe I see a situation and I say, I don't think that's appropriate. I think you could improve your investing, but there's some detrimental impact to make that change. Maybe there's some sort of penalty or fee if you get out of it. Or maybe it's an account that you've had for a lot of years, in a non-qualified or a taxable account. And I might look at it and say, I don't really like this investment portfolio, but if you moved it now, there's a ton of embedded gains, and you'd get whacked with taxes if you moved it to me. You shouldn't do that. You should leave it where it is. So unless we can give you a compelling reason that you can see the value and why you would be better off in repositioning assets, unless I can demonstrate that, I'm not going to ask you to reposition assets just so I can get paid. It has to make sense for you. At the end of the day, any relationship between financial advisor and client should be a win-win proposition. You should be better off with our services net of cost, or you should fire us, and we have to have an opportunity to make a profit. We can't help anybody if we don't make money. Now, we don't exist just to make money, just like I don't live just to breathe. But if I don't breathe, I don't live. If we don't make money, we don't exist, and we don't help anybody. So we have to establish a fee or a method of compensation so we can have a profit and exist and continue to help people. And you should be better off for our services, or you should find somebody else. I apologize. I got so long. I get passionate about this stuff. Thank you, Jerry.
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter writes, Bruce, would this be a good time to do a Roth IRA conversion?
Great question. We actually mentioned this last week. So the answer is yes, and the reason why can be because if your account value actually is down right now because of the recent market retractions, then if you did some conversion, the taxes are going to be smaller. So you're not getting out of the market. You're staying in the investments. You're staying in the market, but it's a smaller chunk of money going to the Roth. So it's a smaller size of conversion. So it's a smaller tax bill. And then assuming the market will come back again, now that money's sitting in the tax-free Roth, but the conversion didn't cost you as much in taxes because the account balance went down. So market retractions is definitely one of the times where we really focus on whether or not Roth conversions make sense for a client. The other sort of sweet spot for Roth conversions, and I'm oversimplifying this because in the real world, it's definitely a little bit more complicated. But the other really good time where we look at Roth conversions is if you've retired and you're not getting a paycheck anymore, so your income is down, but you haven't yet got to the age where you filed for Social Security. So you're in that window of I'm retired with and not getting a paycheck, but I'm also not drawing Social Security. So my taxable income is way down. So I can shift money from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, and I might be able to do it, you know, at a really low tax rate, 10%, 12%, something like that. So those are kind of the two sweet spots after a market retraction and when your income is down because you're retired and you're not getting a paycheck, but you're also not drawing Social Security. That's when we really focus on Roth conversions.
Okay, 651-461-9226. The texter writes, if I put a transfer upon death on a piece of real estate to someone, does that person still get the stepped up basis?
So transfer on death is essentially synonymous language with beneficiary. And the answer is generally yes, that there would be a step up in basis. Trying to think this through even as my lips are moving and words are coming out. So if I have any investment, whether it's a stock portfolio or it's real estate, and I have a transfer on death or payable upon death, or they're named as a beneficiary, the basis steps up. And for listeners that don't know what the texter's talking about, so let's say whatever this asset was, in this case, they're talking about a piece of real estate. It could be stocks or an investment portfolio. Let's say my basis is $100,000, and now this asset is valued at $300,000. If I sell that asset while I'm alive, I have to pay capital gains taxes on that $200,000 of gain. But if my children, let's say, are the beneficiaries of this asset, and I pass away holding this asset, even though my basis was $100,000, now it's worth $300,000. The basis steps up to the value of when I die. So my kids would inherit with a basis of $300,000. So if they turn around and sell it for $300,000, they don't have any taxes. Now, if they wait for a while before they sell it and it grows even more and they sell it when it's worth $400,000, then they'd have to pay capital gains on the $100,000 of gain from the basis that stepped up to $300,000 when I died to the $400,000 value when they sell it. The reason I was kind of confusing myself as I was thinking this through is I was thinking, you know, real estate that you invest in or that you own that's not a resident, which is different from the home that you live in, if it's a property that you resided in and established residency and you've lived there two of the previous 5 years, we generally don't worry about any of that basis and whatnot because people can exclude gains, married couple filing jointly, of up to $500,000, and very few people have over $500,000 of gain in their property. Although I think we had a question in recent weeks of somebody that actually did, so it can happen. Susie?
651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce Helmer, founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, this one writes, I am in a multiple member LLC, some of whom are trusts. Does the trust get a step up on basis if the trust beneficiary dies? Well, I think that's the same. That's a different question.
Yeah, this is okay, and this is probably going to be the last I'm guessing that we're going to have time for.
Yeah.
I'll do the best I can, but I'll preface in advance. There's probably more things about this that I don't know than things that I do, and part of that is my own it's almost a question for a lawyer, and I tell people all the time, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not going to practice law. We have attorneys at Wealth Enhancement Group that I can go consult with when I get questions like this on a one-on-one from a client, but it's almost more of a legal question. But here's what I know. LLC, that the texter writes, is a limited liability corporation. And what they're saying is the members of this LLC, some of them are individual owners or it's in their own personal name, while others have a trust. They might have established a trust for tax reasons, for liability protections reasons, and the trust owns their ownership shares in this limited liability corporation. And so when you get into a complex corporate structure like that, you're gonna need, you know, probably a professional accountant and or an attorney to help you navigate those waters. As a financial advisor, I know a little bit about that, but I would never tackle a question like that without going in-house at Wealth Enhancement to my in-house CPAs and or JDs within the company, because that's getting into some pretty complicated stuff. So it's a good question.
Yeah.
I just don't know that it's a good question for the format that we have today and my ability to try to answer in the time we have.
Well, Bruce, we have about a minute. I don't know how fast you could do this. This person just said they didn't take their RMD in 2025 yet because of before the downturn, debating whether or not to wait or do it now until the market goes up. And again, we have about 30 seconds, but kind of
really fast. Yep, really fast. So I don't know where the market's going to go from between now and the end of the year. And in terms of whether you take it or wait, I would say, what is your basis or what is your investment? So even though we've had some retraction recently, you might still have a lot of embedded gains and you're still would be locking in those gains to do it now. If you wait till later in the year, it might get worse, might get better. I don't know. But if you could do it now in a gain position as opposed to a loss position, I'd probably say do it sooner than later.
All right. That was quick. Very good. And if you did not get your question answered, we have a lot of people with questions here. You can call 888-6-ADVICE, or you can email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week.